Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Alone Month. I'm Francesca Spector, a journalist, author, and host of this podcast. Each week, I interview people that I'm interested in, all about their time alone and what it means to them.
It isn't enough to say that you can know yourself by being alone, because there are ways of being alone that below the surface are actually ways of not being with yourself.
You can feel lonely in a room full of people, and you can feel so content completely on your own.
Whatever your age, life stage, or relationship status, we can all enjoy a bit of time by ourselves. And on this show, we discover wisdom and personal stories about how to do that. Because when alone time isn't lonely, it's Alone Month.
People who are able to feel seen and understood, feel enough within themselves when they're alone, are so capable of giving that to others.
A lot of the cultural discussion that we have tends to be about the adjustments that introverts need to make in order to thrive in our extroverted world. But I think it really goes both ways. I think that all of us need to learn to make adjustments, you know, to find a greater sense of balance.
I'm really excited to introduce you to my guest on this week's episode, Poppy J, best known as the co-host of Brown Girls Do It Too, the show that won Podcast of the Year at the British Podcast Awards in 2020. She's also a BAFTA-nominated documentary maker devoted to chronicling difficult real-life stories for BBC Three and Channel 4. But she's also been so honest about her own. After entering a forced marriage at the age of 19, Poppy got divorced at 25 and has spent the past decade exploring her identity. In a Times interview earlier this year, she said, "I'm 37 and my whole life has been riddled with shame. Now I try to live by confronting it and owning it." And owning it is exactly what she does in this episode. We talk about everything from the self-knowledge that comes from being alone, doing nothing, why Poppy is trying to be more honest about her need to be by herself after casual sex, and the unexpected beauty of a mutual, respectful breakup in your 30s. Before we get to the episode, I want to thank our season sponsor, Sensate. Have you always loved the idea of meditation but never quite got on with the practice? Sensate, a palm-sized infrasonic stress and anti-anxiety device, is the friend that you need. I've been practicing things like breathwork and meditation for 2 years, but integrating this little device into my daily sessions, which syncs up your choice of relaxing soundscapes from the Companion app, has helped me discover a new kind of deep relaxation. There are lots of tracks to choose from, including nature sounds for stress relief and soothing sleep rhythms. Visit getsensate.com/alonement for 10% off your first device. I'll also pop that link in the show notes. Poppy J, welcome to the show. How are you doing today? The last time I saw you was on stage for the theatre adaptation of Brown Girls Do It Too. How's life since becoming a theatre star?
Not much has changed, I won't lie. The world of theatre is very different to the world of podcasting and my normal day-to-day job, which is a director. Doing anything live is actually petrifying. 15 minutes before we go on, especially me, when I go on stage, the nerves and the adrenaline kicks in. I always feel like I need to take a nervous poo. And it just, your body does really weird physiological things. And you're like, am I nervous or do I want to take a poo? No, you're just nervous. The adrenaline kicks in and then you're like, oh my God, I've got, and then you have to use all that adrenaline when you're on stage and you just kind of just, you're just pelting through. But it's comparatively much less glamorous to the world of TV. Like we did the theater and then we were just, and it was an incredible experience and one to remember. And then we just went back to our day jobs.
Yeah, I mean, you were so bloody natural about it. I can't remember if it started like on time or maybe like, you know, a sort of like nervous poo amount of time in.
No, I didn't do any. No, South Asians are basically always late. Hashtag not all South Asians, but most of the, we always run late, always. And in fact, I had to do a story at one point, like a call out to anyone who's coming to see the show that day to be like, please, can you come on time? But we have to literally stop the first bit of the show to be like, oh, just let the aunties in, let them, you know, so it's just, we have a very relaxed kind of approach to our show. You know, it's very much in our culture to let people talk during a show and whisper, unlike a lot of the theatre experiences where you're kind of shushed. We like people, and more often than not, people aren't talking about what they cooked that night. They're talking about something they'd just seen, you know. So we'd be doing a sketch or talking about something, and also we liked to engage with our audiences. So I'd like to think that we sort of threw the rule book out and made our experience more comfortable for South Asian audiences. But yeah, they're always late.
Yeah, well, the amount of South Asian aunties sitting in the front row, just sort of dominating that room. It was amazing. It was like a giant living room, which is crazy because it's the Soho Theatre.
That is exactly the atmosphere that we wanted to create. It was like a giant living room.
It was super nice.
Yeah, it's like being around a dinner table or being in a living, which is exactly what happens. You know, you have all your aunties and uncles and cousins all like packed into a living room. Everyone's kind of cackling and talking and gossiping. And that's the kind of, and it's raucous, you know, that's the environment that we wanted to create. Because I think in theatre spaces, you don't often see brown women in theatre spaces. It's expensive for a start. The atmosphere can be quite stuffy, very unwelcoming. And I think we wanted to break some of those rules, break some of those barriers and make it feel as comfortable as possible for the women coming to see our show. And they weren't just sort of Gen Z women. They were millennial women and older mothers coming with their daughters. It's how you see cinema in India or Bangladesh. You know, if you're back in the motherland, you'd watch a film, a 3-hour Bollywood film, and there'd be just people would be talking incessantly throughout. It's just part of our culture, whether you like it or not. And so we wanted to keep sort of the DNA of that.
Sounds way too cringy talking about it like a family, but I think it's sort of had that.
Yeah, we want to create a family. You're saying all the right things are not cringy. We love it. It's like, that is exactly, it's like a big slumber party for everyone and everyone's invited.
A big slumber party. I think that's how you're going to sell the next one. I hope there's going to be a next one.
We haven't confirmed anything yet, but fingers crossed.
I normally ask guests on this show if they're an introvert or an extrovert. You recently described yourself as a narcissistic extrovert in an Instagram post. So are we going with that? Are we committing to that?
Oh my God, I say some of the most ridiculous things. That is a really good question. Because in my 20s, I was definitely an out and out narcissistic, bordering on very much insecure, like a lot of women in their 20s are, extrovert. But I'm now finding that I'm an ambivert. I'm a growing ambivert. Ambivert apparently have the qualities of introverts and extroverts. I think, look, let's call a spade a spade. I am a natural born extrovert. That is like my baseline. But as I've gotten older, I have really, really craved, in fact, need to be on my own. I like being on my own in a way that I never really consciously thought about it in my 20s. Also, I'm an Asian. I'm one of six. Even if I wanted to be alone, I couldn't. I'm always surrounded by people, my family, my sisters, my brother. But as I've gotten older, I'm definitely embracing my innie a lot more than
embracing
previously.
Embracing your innie.
Yeah, no, I definitely
I love
am.
That.
Yeah, I enjoy being in my own company. I like it. It's a good time to reflect and think and just kind of poodle around and you're kind of in your head and your thoughts a bit. So what about you? Are you an extrovert or an introvert?
I'm a bit of a I like the reason I started the podcast is because I was an extrovert and I like had a breakup. Classic story, right? I had a breakup and I, about 5 years ago now, pre-pandemic, and I was living alone and I was like, why am I not good at this? Why is everyone like, you know, yeah, you're Carrie Bradshaw, do your, you live your best life. And I was like, this is quite hard to navigate. But I've got better at it. I mean, would you say that you're good at time alone? Would you say you're good at like making the best of that or making it a positive experience?
Yeah, yeah, I'm really good at time alone. I wasn't always good at time alone. I always felt the need to fill it with something. I felt the need to be with friends or go out or do something or have a life. This is when also really embarrassing. You know, when Facebook was popping off and you always needed to put up an album, a Friday night album or a holiday album to show that you had a really busy life. The prospect of not having any plans to not fill up an album gave me low-key anxiety. So I was just like constantly needing to fill it up with time and people. Even in like silence, I didn't like silence within a conversation. I needed to fill that up with with sound. But now I'm really good at doing nothing. So when I'm on my own, I don't know. I don't know where the time goes. I mean, the time, a fair amount, sadly, probably does go on social media. But like, it's a really good question. Am I good at being alone? Yes, I like being alone and I don't have enough time alone. Do I use that time wisely? Probably not as much as I'd like to.
Yeah, it's so funny actually thinking about these social media platforms because obviously, I mean, we're both like Facebook generation. That was the OG. Actually, sorry, MySpace was the OG, I think. But yeah, it was...
MySpace was the OG, like, but I didn't really get MySpace at all.
Yeah, so you were more the Facebook where you sort of go out with your, your like actual camera and then fill up that album. So weird. We're living for it. I mean, I guess Instagram stories is even more instant, right? It's like, I don't know. Do you ever feel that pressure? Do you ever feel like, oh, I need to put something on my story to show the world? Or are we over that now?
I did before when it first came out. I always come to any trend quite late and I'm always the last to leave. That's always my thing. I did for a time, but now I don't care. But I really do think it's just the beauty of getting older. As a woman, you just give zero fucks. I give absolutely zero fucks. And when I speak to my female friends in their 40s and 50s, they're like, it only gets better. So I can't wait. I can't wait to get older. Do you feel the pressure of putting up stories?
I think I've recently sort of opted out of Instagram. I know that can't be a permanent thing. I'm saying opted out, like it can only ever be a holiday, right? Especially if you work in the media. And if you when this podcast comes out, when this season comes out, I will want to promote that. And I guess if you've got like a bit of a, if you've got a professional reason to be on it as well. I guess less so with the stories, because I kind of think you make like a weird Faustian bargain almost of like making whatever you're doing like 10% less fun, like minimum, if you put it on stories? I don't know. Maybe that's not the case.
I mean, I have a very different relationship with stories. It's like, there's box one. Box two is whatever antics I get up to over the weekend. Box two. And then it's sort of information. I mean, I'm really active on it right now because obviously with the ongoing war, it's been a really great tool for me to be able to share other people's work and I hate that phrase, raise awareness, but, raise awareness, educate people. And so in that respect, I've got a different relationship with it, certainly in the last month. But I don't feel the pressure. I mean, I waste a lot of time on Instagram. I don't even go on TikTok. I mean, I'm on it as like a sort of low-key stalker, but there's just so many apps and I just don't have time for all of them. So I just kind of stick to Instagram. So I do spend a lot of time procrastinating on it, but I've got a stack of books to read and I haven't even started.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to do because it's so much more immediate, right? It's so, I don't know. I think it's almost like, it's a bit like TV right now. TV is too good. It's too compelling. Like it's actually inconvenient. But when you talk about doing nothing, like does that sort of encroach on your doing nothing time? Like the sort of Instagram stuff, or are you like good at separating that?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, totally encroaches on my doing nothing time. I want doing nothing to not involve me being on my phone. That is pure doing nothingness peak. You've reached the kind of enlightenment level. Right now, my doing nothing and spending time alone, a lot of it is, a big chunk of it is me on my phone. But what is interesting is I don't need people around me. That is what I found quite new. In fact, I don't want people around me. So I don't know if that makes me an introvert.
Well, I don't know. I kind of think that everyone needs a bit of it. So yeah, there's that interesting study that actually in the aftermath of divorce, men are much more likely to remarry in that sort of 5-year period afterwards. And I think sometimes that's framed as like, okay, men find it easier to move on. But I don't know. I wonder sometimes if it's actually like women are more content with age to be by themselves, that sort of a desire for, I guess I'd call it alonement, is stronger, like with age.
That's so interesting, isn't it? I think it's a combination of a few things, because it's now that you've told me this fact, in fact, every man I know in my life, in real life, whether it be an ex-partner's granddad or uncle, or they've remarried quite quickly, but the women tend to be alone. Now, the skeptic in me is like, women, if they're divorcing, they tend to have children. It's usually harder for single mums or parents to maybe get back on the date. I'm dating now, and certainly the very real harsh conversations I have with other guys about dating women with kids, it's hard. It's unless you're also a dad with kids, it's not exactly your number one choice. I also think there's a degree of men needing someone to take care of them. I really do. And I think, yeah, there is probably this sort of desire. Women can be on their own because they often have to do everything on their own anyway. You know, there's the women load, the mother load. Just by mere fact that you're a woman, you have to, you end up doing so much in any relationship. And so I think that we're just built a bit tougher. We're built thicker. And so, like, with thick skin, I mean, so I think we can take on some of the world's or society's struggles. I think all of those things combined, though, I imagine, you know, result in that fact you just mentioned.
Obviously, it's difficult because obviously, you know, cases are so different. And this is where it's interesting to think about all the different stories that can be told, because I think there's this urge to like find a general narrative like, oh, it's so much harder dating as a woman after, you know, after divorce or after the age of whatever. And it's just not really true. It's just that there are so many different reasons. And I think to be tarred with the same brush sort of takes away some of the like choice that's in it.
I also think one of the other reasons why the women do this is because we have such a high standard. Like, think about it. You just come out of a relationship. The guy's not right for you. So the next guy wasn't right for you for XYZ. That's why you're no longer together. And so the next guy you're going to go for, the bar is so much higher, you know, like the bar is so much higher for the kind of things that you want. And I don't know, I'm not saying all men are shit, but like, it's just not, it's not as easy to find. And I think as women get older, they also really know who they are, or they begin to understand themselves in a clearer way than say when they were in their 20s or early 30s. And I think that contributes to, and they are just good at being alone. They kind of crack on, don't they? We women, we just have to crack on.
Yeah, it's a bad combination. It's like an inconvenient combination of things. But I mean, so I mean, your relationship history is interesting because, you know, obviously you were married, you were in an arranged marriage from when you were 19. You then had a decade long relationship and then you launched into another one last year. And then I think there was an episode of the podcast of Brown Girls Do It Too, where you said that you needed to work on yourself because you literally hadn't been single at all in your adult life. How's that going?
It's going great now. I came out of my 10-year relationship and then got into a situationship with this guy, and it was just a mess. And I was like, what am I doing? I need to get out of this. I need to get out. I did, and I could not be happier. Like, the idea of being in a relationship with anyone, it makes me sick. I can't. Like, I love being on my own. I need this time alone. I've never dated me. God, that sounds so cringe, but like, I've never had time to just me. And I just love it. I have a bed to myself, a bathroom. I have like my own space and my own things. And I've never had that. You know, my whole life I was sharing with my sister, then went straight into a relationship, and then lived back home with my family again, then went straight into another relationship. So there was no time where I was on my own. But I'm on my own now and loving it.
Are you doing the actual dating thing?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely dating. Oh, my God, yeah. I'm very much dating. And dating in your late 30s is fucking amazing. Oh, my God. It is the best because you're not riddled with any insecurities or anxieties. I wouldn't say any, but like largely, I don't give a fuck. You're like, okay, well, that didn't work out. Move on to the next, you know? And because I don't want a relationship, I don't like anyone that much. I don't necessarily obsess over them. Like I really, you know, I haven't. I'm trying to think about someone I'm like really liked and I haven't. So
yeah,
it's great.
On the show, you were saying how when your relationship, your decade-long relationship ended, it was like, it was so mutual and respectable. And I do wonder whether that's something that can actually, you know, you'll say when you break up with someone in your 20s or whatever, oh, like, yeah, it's mutual. But I don't know how much that can be the case when you kind of have so much ego involved. Whereas, like, what's the difference, you know, for you, do you think, when you're in your 30s and you're having those conversations?
Well, I mean, the mutual aspect was that he also wanted to break up with me. We both wanted to break up with each other. And it felt very equal and we were quite respectful of each other. You know, I saw him yesterday or the day before for brunch. Like he's still very much in my life. I still very much love him. He's incredibly important. And there was no ego. I think with us, there's this pure love that you just want the other person to be happy. And, you know, he wasn't happy with me and I wasn't happy with him. So you've got to let them go. But I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better breakup. Like it was painful and we cried and there were many tears, but it was done out of love for each other.
Yeah, which is nice. I think, oh, I didn't think we see that modeled enough. You know, there's that sort of like, God, I was chatting to someone about growing up in the sort of, you know, 90s, noughties culture of like, did you remember Eamon's song, Fuck It? And then Frankie's Fuck You Right Back? Remember that sort of breakup?
Yeah.
Mantra, yeah, like that ugliness. It was always about like, you know, some sort of woman, like, you know, like sassy, like just being broken up with, but you know, like, you know, Beyonce's to the left, all of that. It's always like a breakup had to be a game of who won or who didn't.
Yeah, but I just think we live in a society where we let it get that far. I see less mutual breakups than like someone wants to be with this person and the other person wants to leave. Those are the kinds of relationships that I see on TV shows, drama, film, and in real life.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But the reality is, we should have broken up with that person since 6 to 9 months before we actually broke up with them. But we let it go on for so long and we harbor so much hatred that any modicum of respect or trying to be respectful kind of goes out the window because you're just point scoring at that stage. And that isn't even getting to like someone maybe cheating or having an affair or doing something that really breaks someone's heart, you know, or like is really disrespectful in that sense. But yeah, I'm so glad it ended the way it did. Just because it was mutual doesn't make it any less painful, but it was kind of a beautiful breakup, if I'm allowed to say. Like, it was hard and so hard, like 10 years. And it's really properly taken me till this year to kind of be like, you know, now when I think about him, I don't well up. I'm like, I always knew it was the right thing to do. I always knew that. But your who you are is so inextricably linked to that person. Your identity becomes that their identity. And, you know, you go from seeing this person every single day and verbalizing and sharing every thought that you have, which is what I did, to then they're suddenly not in your life. And he's with someone now. And they live in our, you know, and he's very happy. He's in love, you know, hearing someone you love be in love, not with you, but with someone else is quite, it's quite hard to hear, but it's ultimately what you need to hear because life moves on and he needs to move on and you want him to be happy ultimately. So they're all healthy things, but it's just kind of how you choose to deal with it.
Yeah, that sounds so mature. It sounds kind of like how I wanted unconscious coupling to be.
When Gwyneth said that, I sort of laughed and mocked her, but actually we are the epitome of unconscious coupling. That's exactly what we did. But that's only because I did that consciously. It wasn't so unconscious, actually. I did that very consciously because my first breakup was a fucking car crash. It was basically, I may as well have written a song. Like, it was so EastEnders level trash. Honestly, it was horrible that I was like, I never want to do that again. I never want to break up with someone like that again.
And talk me through, is this the arranged marriage that you had when you were 19?
That's my ex-husband, yeah. It was horrible. We had a house and he was living in the house. I mean, I can't get into too much detail, but like it was so, and I was so young and so naive and so angry. I was so angry and really reactive. Like, I wasn't mature at all. It's because I was still a kid, you know? And I had all of this I was pretending to play an adult and had all of this responsibility when I was just literally a child. Not a child, but, you know, was still quite young. And I was like, I'm not doing that again. And I think because of my marriage ending, I have a much more pragmatic approach to relationships, which is not all relationships are meant to last forever and ever and ever. And they end. Not all, you know, I'm not saying every single relationship, just things have an expiration date. You know, you've got to just ride it out for as long as it feels right.
So instinctively, when you go into something, can you thinking in that sort of finite.
Yeah, I'd love to be proved wrong. But you think about it, Francesca. We are the one generation. We're not our parents' generation. We're not the baby boomers. We're not our grandparents' generation. They had to be together because they had no other choice. I mean, yeah, they loved each other. I'm sure couples loved each other. But they don't have what we have, which is the paradox of choice. Okay, things are so different now for women that we can choose to be by ourselves. We can sexually please ourselves. We are earning as much as men are. We are doing whatever we need to do by ourselves. If you don't like someone, you just go on an app, you find someone. Like, the ease with which you can date is like getting a Deliveroo. Like, we have all these things at our fingertips. So I'm not saying all women, but like, we're less likely to put up with shitty behavior from men when they're being annoying. I think it's different when you have kids. I think when you have kids, it's a different ball game. I don't have kids, so I can't speak from experience, but I certainly know from friends I talk to and people I see in bad marriages, they stay together for the kids. That's a whole other thing. But I'm talking about women who don't have children or are not locked by some sort of mortgage. We're just willing to put up with less shit.
You speak on the podcast quite openly. You spoke in the theatre show with Brown Girls Do It Too about not wanting to have kids. Could you, just because a lot of people listening to this probably are navigating that question for themselves at the moment, could you talk about what your rationale was behind making that decision and maybe how that's affected your relationships as well?
My rationale behind making that decision was I have been a third parent like my whole life. I've been a carer, sort of a guardian to my siblings, and you know, I'm one of six, and I felt like I did such a horrible job with them. I mean, they were all amazing and lovely and they came to the show and they were like, you were amazing. And, you know, my heart swells with pride and I love them all. But I had such a tough time, you know, when I, instead of the time that I should have been a kid, I was parenting, and really badly, I should add, really badly, because I picked up terrible habits from my parents, and that's how they raised me. Anyway, so it's a vicious cycle. So, and I still feel to a degree that I am still parenting my siblings, and I just don't have the time or the energy. I feel like I've done a whole lifetime of it, and to do it with my own children, I just don't think I'll make a good mother. And I know that's a taboo thing to say in society, but there are good mums and bad mums. That's just the way there are good dads and bad dads. It's one of those things that you can never talk about, but we all do. We all judge everyone's parenting technique. But I think it's okay to say that I'm not going to be a good mum. I'll be a great auntie. I'll be an amazing auntie, but I just don't think I'll be a good mum. You know, I'll have expectations on that kid. I'll want that kid to go into certain schools and be in a certain way. And I think that's a terrible way to bring up a child. Ironically, I have completely that maternal instinct in me, but I'm not born to be a mother. You know, clearly I've got this, you know, I'm very empathetic. What's the right word?
Yeah, either works. Let's go with empathetic.
It's just not in me. I'm absolutely missing a gene. And in terms of affecting relationships, my last partner, the partner of 10 years, he was confused. And I was confused at the time. And then sort of at the end of the relationship, I was like, I definitely don't want to have kids. And I became an egg donor. He's still confused. I mean, I asked him this literally the other day and he's like, I don't know. I reckon he probably will have a child, but how it affects my future relationships, I imagine it will. And if it does, then, you know, it's not right for me.
Well, we say effects can be good or bad, right? That can be a positive thing.
Yeah, it's interesting when you said, how do you think it affects your relationships? I immediately took it as negative, because most men I meet do want children. There isn't a single man I've met that doesn't. I mean, not that I necessarily talk about this stuff on a first date, but like, you know, you have an idea and it's like they want a family and they want to settle down and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think thank you for being so honest about that, or not just in your personal life, but with your platform. Because I think, as you said earlier, we are in a weird generation where a lot is changing. And in a way, we're going first with a lot of these things. And I think a lot of people now are looking for models, you know, of any gender, you know, who are saying it's all right to not want to parents in that traditional sense. And also, you said that you have a maternal instinct. I read somewhere a while ago that mother, it's a verb too. And it sounds like you do that in so much of your life.
Oh my God. Yeah, I absolutely do. In my friendships, with my siblings, like, I feel like I give so much emotionally as well to the people that I love around me. And I think to do that with a kid, it'd wipe me out, you know, completely wipe me out. I think being a parent is one of the most important jobs in the world. And like, I look at my friends, like my friend Rabina, my co-host, she's an incredible mother. And I look at my friend Inas and I'm like, they are, if I was ever going to be a mum, I'd want to be a mum like those two, but I just don't think I can. And I know my friends, if they hear this podcast, they'll be like, but you can. It's like, no, I can't. I know I can't.
Yeah. To the standard,
and I think you have to really want motherhood. Yeah, yeah, and I just, you know, I think you have to really want motherhood. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it. I mean, I don't. It's not even that I question it. I don't want it. But I've come to the conclusion now of not wanting it. I was confused about it for most of my early 30s, for sure.
Do you think it's almost like you've done things the other way around to most people because you were married from
yes,
so young?
Yeah, Yes, I've completely, I'm like the inverse Benjamin Button. I don't think I've got the Peter Pan complex, but I'm definitely living my 20s in my 30s and probably will into my 40s, yeah, for sure.
Obviously, you'll have boundaries with how much you want to say about this period of your life. But when you were married, and this was quite a long period of time, this was between sort of 19 and 25, or I know it broke down a little bit before that, but it, you know, 19 to 25 was when you got divorced. How did that shape your ability to be by yourself? Or what did life even look like when you were living in that situation, in that relationship?
Oh God, you know, that is such a good question. Like, in our culture, if you're divorced, you're kind of expected to move back home, which is what I did. And I was studying for my master's in journalism, so there was no way I could afford to live out, even if I wanted to live out. The idea of being on my own was not on the table. In our culture, if you're a divorced woman, it's stigma and taboo enough as it is. The only way to move out again from your family home is to get married again. I knew I did not want to get married again anytime soon. And it's, I think it's really interesting. Had I been born 10 years earlier, I would have got divorced. I think it's kind of customary to wait, you know, 9 months, 10 months, a year to then get married again. You get married again quite quickly. And not always, you know, not always, and don't quote me, but like generally the custom is, the idea, the goal is to get the woman married again in a shorter space of time before she gets into old spinster, you know, status. So I could never be alone. It didn't even cross my mind that I could be alone. I didn't know if I wanted to be alone. And I didn't know if I needed to be alone because I constantly have, I think that's why I crave being alone now, because I'm always around, have always been around family. You know, my family are very, very loud like me. You know, we have a very intense relationship with one another, and it's just like there's lots of laughs, but there's also tears and shouting, and there's just like a lot going on. So I didn't know that I could be on my own.
And what about when you were actually married? What did that look like in terms of, were you alone in the house at all? Like, was that?
Yeah, I was alone, and and it's funny, like even then I liked being alone because when he wasn't home, but I think that's more to do with the fact that I didn't really like him, you know, than wanting time by myself.
Yeah.
I just needed that space. But even with my ex-partner, you know, he, like in any relationship or friendship, you need time away from each other to appreciate the time you have together.
So it wasn't healthy there, but now you've got to the point where it can be healthy to sort of avoid.
I've gone the other way where it's like, I'm probably bordering on an unhealthy how much time I don't want to spend with people. Not with friends, but like I really, you know, I have dates with guys and then I have sex and I'm like, get out now, fuck off, leave. I'm just like, out. I don't want to see you in the morning. Like, it's really quite a knee-jerk reaction. I need to kind of figure what that is, but I'm just like, I don't want to deal with you in the morning. I don't want to be polite. I don't want to be courteous. I just want you out. But, you know, I say it in a very, of course, if this was the other way around and it was a guy telling a girl, this would be a very different conversation. But I'm very kind of open and honest on the date that, and if things were going that way, I'd be like, I've got to kick you out, sadly. You know, I'm kind and polite within the context of the conversation, but I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, you need to leave. If there was a What Woman Want, but that film, but in my head instead of Mel Gibson's head, you'd be like, get the police on this woman.
What is that? Because is that you need to, like, I don't know, sit, process, absorb whatever happened the night before? Or is that that you just don't ever want to see them again?
It's a combination of, I probably don't want to see them again, and I just don't want to deal with, like, I don't like standing on courtesy and niceness when there's nothing in it. Like, I just want to be on my own. I don't like someone in my space, because then I have to go into hosting mode. And I've done that my whole life as a woman, as an Asian woman, constantly kind of, are you okay? And pandering and, you know, looking after myself. I just don't want to take care of anyone except me. I think that's what it boils down to.
It sort of, again, seems to come back to you living life almost backwards.
Yeah, it really is. And I am living it backwards and I'm really enjoying it. And look, this is a phase. I'm sure if I spoke to you in like 3, 4, 5 years time, I'd be in a very different space. But this is the space that I'm in now. And I really love it and I enjoy it. I mean, I could have a bit of a better work-life balance, but then so could we all.
And you literally, so, you know, in terms of sort of boundaries around, like, you know, talking about things, having your own privacy, I guess, like we were talking before we came on, like I said, my usual question, is there anything that you don't want to talk about? And you were like, no, that's fine. That's anything will go. And, you know, even on the podcast, you call yourself a trisexual because you'll try anything once. And it's kind of amazing to me when I listen. I'm like, wow, I love how many taboos you just break every episode and just sort of going there. And like, it's good. You like take away the shame from like so much stuff that I probably will talk about probably as a result of the podcast.
I think that is one of the best things anyone has said to me this year. So I remember that you said that. That is the nicest compliment anyone has ever given me this year. Because we're so burdened by shame, not just brown women, women in general, black women, white women, we're so burdened by shame. You know, our bodies are never our own. We're too fat, too thin, too slutty, too much of a, you know, too strict, too, you know, it's constantly up for speculation. And I think by talking about it and being, well, we try to be funny and silly, you know, we're not sitting there or standing there on our little soapbox preaching, at least that's what I don't think we're doing to our listeners. If it means you walking away, pushing yourself that 5% more, or feeling 10% less shame over this thing, or picking up your phone and WhatsApping your mate, then that is, we've all done this, you know, we're all in it together. We're all helping to move that shame. We're kind of cracking away at that shame together. And that's why I love doing the show, because it's not Rubina and I put on a pedestal. So many of those stories and sketches and moments and anecdotes, they were the anecdotes of the women that were there. You know, this whole thing of being seen, being heard. I mean, the number of times women, Asian women especially, saying we felt seen, we felt heard, because we don't see us in any sort of mainstream media, really. So it's, you know, our stories are their stories. It's our shared sort of experience. And I think what we like to do is, you know, we like to bring a comedy value, and we like to be funny. Annoyingly, I guess nothing is off the table.
You say annoyingly, like, is there anything that you wouldn't be open to talking about? Like, would you ever keep a diary, for instance, to share private thoughts? Or is that not really a thing you have the need for?
No, because even in my diary, I'm like, I don't want to actually put down what I really think and feel, because someone will see it. So even then, I'm sort of self-censor if I wrote a diary. Yeah, but this is where the narcissism comes in, because you're like, you're writing this diary because you think it's going to get found out. So you write it in a way that is going to get found out. So you're not really true to yourself, are you?
I guess from what you're saying, that there are things that are off bounds that you still wouldn't say on the show or to me in this conversation.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't talk about my siblings or particular. I think my family, I try and protect where I can. It's difficult talking about dating now because these are active dates. So if a guy listens, he'll know it's him. They're not historical. So I have to sort of navigate that. I mean, I think the problem is we've got such big mouths. We talk too much, sadly, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that, though. I'm a lifestyle journalist. So I think you do have to put those boundaries in. And it always, I really admire when people have dating columns or things like that. But also, it's just like, it's almost too meta, right? It's like how is this not going to be affected in some respect by what you're writing in real time? It's like, I don't know, it's like if something's, it almost like seems metaphysical, like if something's observed or narrated, it's like it will change it. So you don't get like an actual idea of how a normal, like non-dating columnist's relationship might pan out.
It all becomes, it all bleeds into one reality, doesn't it? So it's difficult to separate out, yeah.
I still think it's fascinating you wouldn't keep a diary, though. It sounds like it's similar to a friend of mine who wouldn't keep a diary because she had a sibling who would definitely, definitely look at it.
I would never keep a diary. Yeah, it's not a sibling. Someone would see it. I think I don't want people to know my innermost, darkest thoughts because they are quite dark. Just don't want anyone to know them. I do sometimes journal things to help me with my feelings, to unpack feelings. It makes me make sense of things. I've journaled two things in my life to help me make sense of something. But I couldn't write because, yeah, I'd just be worried it'd get found out. And I wouldn't be honest in my writing. I would not be honest. For someone who says a lot, I'm also unbelievably private. So I would not trust that this thing wouldn't get hacked or someone would see it. So best to just keep it all in here.
So, okay, we're coming to the end of the show, but my final question I want to ask you, what is your favorite kind of alone time nowadays at this stage of your life?
You know, I'm still figuring this out because I'm very new to this alonement. So I'm kind of figuring out what is the best of me being alone. And I actually don't know. I think I like kind of being able to stop and have no sense of time. And it's the very rare occasion where I don't feel like someone wants me or wants something, or I've got to do something or send an email or send a text or just do some work. And it's just like, it kind of stands still for me a bit, but I don't get those moments often. And I think I'm still kind of working out what I like doing on my own.
Well, you know, it sounds like a really worthy journey. And it also sounds like something you really deserve after all these years, all these decades in relationships.
Thank you. Yes, I do deserve it. But I think most women, it's something that we should all strive for, I guess, right? Man, woman, you know, being alone is really important. And being okay in your own company.
Thank you for listening. We got through a lot in that episode, and I'm really grateful to Poppy for her honesty, both around the relationships that she's spent her adult life being in and the really important one that she's now nurturing with herself. It was refreshing and a reminder that life is made up of a lot of different chapters, good and bad, and that there's potential to learn from all of them. If this conversation resonated with you, I'd really appreciate it if you took a minute to give us that big 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Meanwhile, if you'd like to follow my writing on a weekly basis, do sign up to my Substack newsletter at francescaspector.substack.com. This season of Alonement was edited by Pineapple Audio Production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.